Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. Could be possibly a wet day, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Weather's been so good, so hot. Yesterday, it was 80 degrees in mid-November. We will take it. We've got another loaded show for you in about 15 minutes. We'll head up to Indianapolis. We'll learn a little bit more about the opponent of the Titans in this short week. Yeah, two more days. They play at Nissan Stadium. Thursday night football, it'll be the Titans and the Colts, a little AFC South matchup. So we'll talk to Bob Kravitz coming up at 10:15. The legendary voice of hockey, Mike Doc Emrick, will join us at 11 o'clock. He just recently retired, and we will talk to him about his Hall of Fame career. So looking forward to talking to Doc Emrick.
And his book.
At 11 o'clock, and his book. Jeff Saturday in the third hour, former, speaking of Colts, former Colts center for a long time. I think he finished his career with the Packers, but long-time center for Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts. Jeff Saturday, of course, who's on ESPN. He will join us in the third hour of the program. Then we head over to West End, talk to Derek Mason at 1 o'clock, and then Mitch Light. We'll talk all things college football following Derek Mason. So loaded show, lots of things to get into, guys. How we doing?
Doing well. Great to get after it again today. Boy, we got a lot of good discussion coming for sure, and a lot of great stories. That Thursday turnaround is tough. Do you guys, if you were the Titans, would you vote for Thursday night football? I mean, I've never been a big fan of Thursday night football, but this is when it really starts to get tough. You've got a banged up roster. You got to turn around and play on Thursday. This is a tough challenge here. Of course, they've had some tough challenges before this season. We know that.
If you've listened to me at all, you would know that I would not vote for Thursday night football. I want two Monday night games. That's what I wish the TV deal was. Just have a Monday night doubleheader every week. We've had that a couple times this year because of the first weekend for COVID, and I prefer that. And I figure, you know, I know why they do it. It's money, but the players, I would think, would prefer not to have that quick turnaround.
Yeah, players prefer to get paid a lot of money, and they get paid a lot of money because of those TV deals. So we can sit here and talk about it and bellyache about it all we want. It isn't changing. Thursday night football isn't going anywhere because they pay good money to be a standalone product on Thursday nights. Lots and lots and lots of money, billions of dollars. And so it didn't go anywhere. So it really doesn't matter what we think, whether it's fair, not fair. Everybody has to play on Thursday night. Everybody's got to deal with COVID. And, yeah, everybody's got to deal with circumstances that are out of their control. And sometimes the mountain looks a lot higher than a lot of other mountains in other organizations. But that's just what it is. So it just doesn't matter. I mean, it's a lame answer, but it's just reality. The reality is it's not
players.
Going
the players are the ones that agree
I
to
would
it.
You've heard me say this, I would never let players or athletes dictate the sport ever. If I was a commissioner, I would never let the players or athletes dictate
it's
a sport.
It's called a collective bargaining agreement, though, and that's where the players in this sport do not stand up for situations like this, where it's just a lot to ask of teams to play a tough game on Sunday and then turn around and play on Thursday.
Oh, they can stand up if they want to, but they choose not to because they want the money.
That is
the
point. That is my point. That's why I bring it up. At the time that the deal is made, nobody's playing, and you're like, yeah, okay, we'll take the money. And then when you get to this stage of the season and you're trying to recover and play on Thursday, it's not as easy. You're kind of saying, boy, why did we do that?
Well, then you get a long break. I mean, there is a silver lining. Then you get a longer break. I mean, you got 10 days to your next game. So, I mean, look, the bottom line is the players, if they wanted to stand up, they could, but they don't want to because they want to get paid lots of money. They want to maximize whatever check and what is the career in the NFL? What is it, 2.5 years? I don't know. What's the career? What's the shelf life? Average shelf life, 2.5, 3.5 years? What is it, 3 years? They just want to maximize every single paycheck they get.
3.3 years.
3.3 years. I mean, they're just not interested in, you know, all the concerns that you threw out there, which are valid. They're just they understand that, but it's the paycheck is more important, because guess what? In 3.3 years or in 4 years or in 5 years, when they're still in their 20s, like a lot of them, they're out in the streets. And guess what? Yep. They're out there looking for a job like the rest of us. And this just in, most jobs out there in the real world, unless you're an owner, they don't pay like the NFL. So they cave because they want the check. And that's why – and the owners know it. That's why. And the commissioner knows it. That's
they
why –
they take advantage of it.
Right. They always know the outcome. I mean, it doesn't matter what we think is right, or, you know, it doesn't matter. It's about the money, and the owner's pockets get padded. The commissioner makes gobs and gobs of money, and the players get paid well. They can make gobs of money, and so everybody is happy. That's the way they look at it. They look at it as this is a win, win, win for everybody. Everybody gets to check mark the box, other than the fact that the rest of us can look back and go, it's probably not a good idea to turn around and play on Thursday. But, you know, that's all of us sitting here doing what we do for a living. Outsiders looking in. It's their world. Shouldn't it be up to them? They have to live it. They have to do it. Doesn't matter what we think.
One team that's happy they're not playing Thursday is the Steelers. Did you see this? They've got issues, including their quarterback. And this is a question I have. Remember all of the discussion we had in the protocol situation that the Titans went through, right, where they were saying, we followed the protocols. Everybody on the outside was saying, well, they must have blown through the protocols. They must have. Is the whole thing, like, Matthew Stafford was in this situation last week, basically couldn't practice, did Zoom meetings, showed up and played. They didn't play very well. They got smoked by the Vikings. And presumably that's what Ben Roethlisberger will be doing here, unless he has the virus. I think it's been speculated. We don't know that he's contact traced, and so he's got to be out of the facility for 5 days, right?
Yeah, that's what was reported on NFL Network this morning, that four Steelers joined Vance McDonald because Vance McDonald was put on the COVID list, and he tested positive, and they were in close contact. They've used the contact tracing. And so Roethlisberger, Vince Williams, Jalen Samuels, Gerald Hawkins are on the COVID list. They have to be there and be isolated for 5 days. They could be eligible to return to the facility on Saturday if they don't show symptoms and they test negative.
So my question is that a part of the protocols that has been there from the start, or is that an amendment or an adjustment that's been made as they've gone through this? It just seems like they're less rigid than they were before, but I can't prove that. It just seems like we're hearing different language, different policies that we didn't hear about in the first few weeks.
I don't know. Sure. That was an interesting conversation listening to Robbie and Rex Road last hour, because every Tuesday they start off the final hour with Charles Robinson. If you haven't heard Charles Robinson,
he's good.
He's must listen to. I mean, he is. I think he is an absolute must listen to every Tuesday at 9 a.m. What him laying out what the Raiders have done, boy.
Now you talk about ignoring protocol.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm surprised listening to that. I'm surprised they didn't get pounded harder than they did.
I know. And him saying that he got texts from other GMs going, whoa, you know, like what is going on
here?
I mean,
just blatantly, just basically thumbing their nose at what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. But
who's the big tackle? Trent Brown? I mean, how many times has he gone on? And it seems like every photo that comes up, he's just like completely ignores any rules whatsoever.
Doesn't want to wear the contract or the contract.
Right.
The
takes
contact
his
tracing thing.
The bracelet off. Yeah. He doesn't even wear it. It's like, dude, you can't do that. I mean,
right.
I don't know what you're thinking. Like, do you think the league is really going to be like, all right, man, that's cool. I mean, well, you're not comfortable or you don't believe in that. That's cool. I mean, we'll make an exception for you.
They got to come down a second time, right? If he doesn't do anything about it, they'll have no choice but to hit him again.
But think about this. Why wouldn't you want to wear something like that? You're afforded a piece of technology that the three of us don't have where, yeah, you're with your team, but it helps you figure out quicker, okay, if you got it, this is how you got it. For us, we go to the grocery store. I mean, we're rolling the dice. So, I kind of look at it that way of, you have this technology that not many people have. This is a, you know, something the NFL has invested a lot of money in, and they're trying to keep you safe. Oh, and by the way, more importantly, let you earn your paycheck and play these games, yet you're going to thumb your nose and act this way and keep landing on the COVID list because you don't want to wear the tracker. That's crap.
Well, it's crap that the Raiders organization, all the way to the top, from the head coach all the way to the top, haven't had that talk with him. And maybe they have. I don't know. But to me, if everybody in the organization from the head coach to the top has had that talk with him and he's still not listening, then you got a huge problem on your hand.
You got to start suspending people.
Yeah, I mean, you got to send a tougher message. But considering what we've learned about the Raiders, I don't think anybody was really giving him that speech because they seemed to be a pretty loose operation.
I think they were after Gruden had to cut that $500,000 check?
Well, I don't know. What he makes a year, $10 million a year? What he make in the booth for a decade plus, $15 million a year? You think John Gruden is where – what was his fine, half a mil?
I think so.
You know,
hang on. Let me pull that up and make sure that wasn't the Raiders. I know he got a pretty hefty fine.
Oh, he absolutely did.
And his net worth is over $100 million.
The fine doesn't have teeth like draft picks and suspensions.
Yeah, and it was a six-round draft pick. So Gruden got $150,000.
$150,000.
The organization got $500,000. But, yeah, no, he doesn't care.
I mean, what's John Gruden worth?
Well, let's open up another Google window.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little low. But I mean, there was reports he was making what $15 million a year in the booth with all of his endorsements and everything, and he did that for how long? And now he's getting paid $10 million a year guaranteed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what's $150,000 to John Gruden?
Yeah, I think this is low. This is in 2019, according to the Street, they say 22.5.
Yeah, there's no way. Unless he spent it all.
Yeah.
Unless he did something we don't know.
I think that's low.
I find it hard to believe that he's only worth that with the money he's raked in over the years.
I mean, I would think at least 30 or above.
Well, I mean, you ask that question, you know, they're trying to you bring up valid points about him and that mindset he should have. Well, you know, Notre Dame has got limited fans. Their team's trying to win a national championship. And look what their fans do. I mean,
I know.
Way to put your team that you're rooting for in harm's way. Good job by you. I mean, what in the world? Are you kidding me?
When I saw them rushing the field, I'm just sitting there going, oh, no.
I was screaming, oh, no, no,
no, no, no, no, no, no.
And you could see it gathering. You could see them preparing. And I'm like, can anybody – I don't know what you do to stop it, but can anybody – do anything to stop this. No. No.
But we're seeing it. It's just the mindset, especially of the younger college-age kids.
I know.
Right? They don't feel sick, and so we're fine. Let's go. Yep. And the next thing you know, you got games canceled. I'm very curious to see what happens on the Notre Dame campus as a result. But we know in the SEC – that the whole theory for LSU of, hey, everybody had it before. Remember, Ed Orgeron was like, I think everybody's had it by now. We should be fine. Well, nope.
I think it's
I think they have one quarterback who could play, one scholarship quarterback. So that game is not getting played.
Just think about the people around you, okay?
So,
okay,
yes,
if you don't care about yourself,
you. That's
fine. If you don't care about yourself,
like that,
then just care about everybody else around.
But they don't. That's been the problem from the start.
Me,
thinking about everybody else. I feel fine, so I'm going.
Yep. We'll come back. We'll head to Indy. We'll talk to Bob Kravitz next on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joints, smoother than smooth here on this Tuesday morning. Let's go to our phone. By the way, Jeff Saturday coming up. In a couple of hours, we'll talk about the Titans' next opponent, like we will with our next guest. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Bob Kravitz is on the line, covers the Colts for The Athletic, been covering the team for a very, very long time in that market. Bob, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I like the Ramones re-entry. There you go.
Yeah, it gets everybody going a little bit on this Tuesday morning. So
exactly right.
And now we've got this matchup with the Titans and Colts. Two times in the next 3 weeks, these two teams will face off. Let's just start in with the game that was taking place this past weekend. I just got to get your thoughts. Like, nobody here is rooting for the Colts to win, but if we're being honest with ourselves, as we talked about yesterday, like that play they called an interception, I mean, come on. If that's a catch, we're back to square one on what's a catch and what's not a catch.
Yeah, that's the column that I wrote. And, you know, I mean, look, is that the reason they lost the game? No. You know, I mean, Baltimore scored 17 straight points in the second half and totally shut down the Colts offense. But that was one of the most egregious calls I have seen in a long time. And I kept thinking, Dez Bryant must be on the Baltimore and thinking, what the hell is a catch? How can that be a catch? And mine back in 2014 wasn't a catch. I don't get it. It was a miserable call. Replay made it exponentially worse. It's not the reason they lost, but it certainly didn't help because Indianapolis had all the momentum at that point.
You're right about that. Good reference with Dez Bryant being back after many, many years being away. He had to have been sitting there going, really? That's a catch?
Really?
There's so many wannabe GMs around the country because fantasy football is a big deal. Millions and millions of potential GMs around the country all thought Jonathan Taylor was going to have a monster year for Indy, Bob, as he went very, very high, at least in all the fantasy drafts I was in this year. Is it fair to say to this point, and I know he had the big fumble that really kind of changed the momentum of the game, but how would you assess his career to this point at the midway point for Indianapolis with Jonathan Taylor?
Well, you know, he started off well. And I remember writing a column off the first game and saying a star is born. You know, I'm sitting here thinking this guy's going to be the next Edgerrin James. He looked that good. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it's vision. I don't know if it's being tentative or what it is, but he has not played well. He's basically been benched in the second half of the last two games. Now, they have a guy, Jordan Wilkins, and they have kind of a gadget guy in Nyheim Hines who can both get the job done. But, you know, I think something we need to keep in mind is, you know, not only is he a rookie, but he's a rookie coming in the year when everything's turned upside down. And nobody's gotten the offseason workouts that they would normally have. So I would think of all the years for rookies to come into the league, this has got to be the most challenging. So you hope that that's what's going on with Jonathan Taylor. I still think he's a hell of a football player. I think he just needs time to get acclimated still.
Paris Campbell, the wide receiver, was taken in the same draft as A.J. Brown for the Titans, so both in their second year and first game. I mean, I know he battled injuries last year. First game, jumps out there. I know he had a nice, I think he had six or seven grabs in the first game. Looked like, okay, a healthy Paris Campbell, maybe he can help this Indianapolis offense. And then I think it was the very next game he got hurt, and he's been out ever since. Is his season done, or is there a possible return for him? Is that anytime soon? Is it maybe even Thursday?
There's a possibility of his return. When that might be, you know how football coaches are. Well, he's progressing, but we don't have a timetable. So, they need guys like him desperately. T.Y. Hilton has got a groin now. He looks like he's on the back nine of his career, maybe the 17th hole. You know, for whatever reason, I mean, well, not whatever reason. Father Time, I think, has caught up. He turns 31, I think, next week, but he seems to have hit the same wall that Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison hit when they were 35. So they desperately need game breakers, and right now, without Paris Campbell, without T.Y. Hilton, they just don't have anybody who can stretch a defense.
We're talking to Bob Kravitz with The Athletic covering the Colts. The big matchup, the first of two over the next 3 weeks, is Thursday night here in Nashville. And Bob, you just sort of set the table for what Phillip Rivers is dealing with. And so as you try to assess what they're getting compared to what they thought they would get when they signed him, trying to be fair, it hasn't been easy weapons-wise, but how would you assess his play?
Yeah, I look, they wanted an upgrade on Jacoby Brissett. I think they got that, but I don't think it's a significant upgrade. You know, remember last year they started the season 5-2 as well, and people were talking, myself included, about how well Jacoby was playing. Then he got a little bit dinged, and he fell apart in the last 9 games. He didn't play 2 games, but the last 7 games. I think Phillips, he's had 2 good games. Otherwise, he's been fairly efficient. I think he's lost 2 games for them, Cleveland and Jacksonville. So he's been, I don't want to say a disappointment, because this is exactly what we thought we were, this is what I thought they were getting. He was a guy who's, again, on the back 9 of his career, who doesn't have the arm strength he used to. And the problem he's got is not only does he not have a great catch of wide receivers, but they're not running the ball well this year. They finished 7th in the league in rushing last year. And you remember that Kansas City game where they just pummeled the Chiefs with the running game. And it's not happening this year. They're last in the league in yards per carry average. So he's not getting a whole hell of a lot of help.
Well, let's flip it to the other side, because one thing that the Colts have done very well is stuff the run. And, of course, that's always a matchup you have to look at when you're playing the Titans. So that would appear to be – so how do you think they'll go about trying to curtail Derrick Henry? Because that's where really the game starts.
Right. Well, I think they're going to sell out to stop the run and make Tannehill throw. And the problem for the Colts is Tannehill can throw. Tannehill – has become a really fine quarterback in this league. Last year wasn't a fluke. He just came of age. The light went on, whatever you want to say. But, yeah, they're going to sell out to stop the run initially. It's what they've been doing all year. It's a shame, because this is a defense who I think has a chance to take this team really deep into the playoffs, but they don't have an offense to pair with it. And so I just think they're going to do what they've always done and try to force Tennessee to be one-dimensional.
You hit on something that I feel like I had noticed, and I was interested in your thoughts about it, where the turnover, if you look at some of the ratings of the Colts, especially, you know, overall and in particular on defense, they're really good. But
they're really good.
The Jacksonville game, the Browns game, I got a chance to watch. It was on here in Nashville. And even you could argue the Ravens game, where they're playing a brilliant first half and then they give away the ball and it's a score right there. Those big plays, the turnovers, have meant everything, and it's cost them a couple of wins.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Jacksonville game, they just frittered that one away. That's not a word I often use, fritter.
Put it in your next column.
Yeah, I was going to say something else, but I thought, well, this is radio. I can't do that.
Okay.
and the Cleveland game, I thought that Phillip Rivers killed him in that game, too. So I'd say 2 out of their 3 losses, Rivers really hurt them with ill-timed interceptions, usually late in the game. That pick 6 against Cleveland was atrocious. That's something a guy who's been in the league 17 years can't be doing. It's when they've lost, excuse me, coming down a little something here. When they've lost, it's been mostly self-inflicted for the most part.
We're talking to Bob Kravitz of The Athletic about the Colts-Titans matchup on Thursday Night Football. So just with the quarterback theme for a second, I mean, as you kind of laid out, this was probably going to be a one-year thing with Phillip Rivers. He signed the one-year deal, but Frank Reich is known for working with quarterbacks. So what is kind of the plan after this year? I mean, I don't view it as Jacob Eason. I don't know if they view it as Jacob Eason, but what is the plan, you know, for him to develop what's next for the Colts?
Well, they have not gone on the record and said anything about their long-term plans. I mean, I think that's something we'll get to eventually once you get through the season, but I think they've got to sell out and move up in the draft and get the guy they need. Clearly, you're just treading water. You're in kind of competitive purgatory when you've got Phillip Rivers. And like I say, this defense is good enough to get them deep into the playoffs, maybe even to a Super Bowl. But offensively, they're just so limited. And while I think, you know, Phillip Rivers is a good bridge quarterback, I don't want to see him again next year. You know, I just don't. I think, you know, he's become kind of a game manager. He had a really nice game against Detroit last week. But other than that, he's been very, very average, if not worse than average.
You talk about, you use the phrase on the back nine of their career. Justin Houston is another one that I think probably fits that mold. But in the couple of years that he's been there, now with DeForest Buckner on this defensive front as well, how has Justin Houston made an impact?
Oh, he's been really good. I mean, he's their leading sack guy last year. He's been very good this year. I mean, their defensive line, you know, Chris Ballard, the GM, wanted to build this thing out from front to back. So their offensive line, while they haven't run the ball well this year, they are, you know, theoretically a good offensive line, I guess. They've shown that in the past. Their defensive line with DeForest Buckner, who's completely changed the mindset over there, with Justin Houston, Grover Stewart, Danico Autry, they have been playing exceptionally good football.
What kind of similarities do you see in, because they've been there around the same amount of time, the growth of the Frank Reich-Ballard relationship and the growth of the Robinson-Vrabel relationship here in Tennessee, because these two teams, you know, made those types of changes around the same time. What similarities have you seen in kind of their growth patterns?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I don't pay really close attention to the Titans until the Colts play them twice a year. But pardon me. I think that Ballard and Reich seem to be on the same page. Reich really put himself out there this year because he really pushed for Phillip Rivers. And if Phillip Rivers fails, then Frank Reich fails. And, I don't think anybody's in trouble here. I think they're going to be given a really long leash. But the Colts haven't made the playoffs on, what is it, four out of the last 5 years, three out of the last four, I forget. They have not been a very good team. But, I think Frank Reich is a solid coach, and he'll do some things that leave your head, make you scratch your head. He's very, very aggressive. You know, he learned that from Doug Peterson in Philadelphia, that you do take chances. You go for it on fourth down no matter where you are. But after we went through Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano, who, were ready to kill each other, it's kind of nice to have a front office where there seems to be some kumbaya.
Yeah, absolutely. Bob Kravitz covered the Colts for a long time. He's with The Athletic. They're in Indianapolis. Hey, we appreciate the time as always, and we look forward to a fun matchup Thursday night.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, appreciate it. This matchup, as we've said yesterday, it could very well be for the AFC South. We'll discuss that. Willie, I know you have some numbers that we will get into when we come back. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint. Here on a Tuesday, Titans and Colts meet on Thursday Night Football here in Nashville. And Willie, I know that you have several numbers that we're going to throw out throughout the show today, but you've done some comparisons with Derrick Henry and some of his numbers.
Well, at the halfway point, I took a look at, and we started hitting on it a little bit yesterday. That's when I sort of began to compile these, because we were talking about how against the Bears, they held Derrick Henry to 21 carries. And there was a point in the game in the fourth quarter where they could have, with the lead, said, this is when we run. This is when Derrick Henry will break the door down. But instead, they used Foreman and McNichols on a three and out, where those three guys got the carries, and they gave the ball back to the Bears. Now they had the game in hand. They were up at the time, I think 24-10. But the Bears went down and scored and made it a little hairy at the end, closer than the game should have been. But the benefit that the Titans got is they held Derrick Henry's carries down. And if you watch the last three or four games, they've made a conscious effort to not overwork him. Yet, at the end of the first half of the season, Derrick Henry has 182 carries. Now, that is way more than he's had for any point in his career. So I started looking back. The goal would be
this year. That's what you're saying?
Yes, this year he has 182 carries. That's more than he's had at the halfway point by far at any point in his career. And so I was thinking, you know, what do you want to have happen in a perfect world? Well, you want Derrick Henry, when the weather gets cold, to start taking over the game the way he did the last 2 years, and certainly last year in the playoffs, right? That is what makes the Titans go. So I started looking back. In 2018, you guys remember the conversation, we were wondering if he was all worth anything, right? He wasn't getting the ball much. He only had 90 carries at the halfway point for only 300 yards. As we know, he exploded in the second half, particularly in December, and ended up with over 1,000 yards. Last year, he had 151 carries halfway through the year for 581 yards. But then, of course, so, I mean, that was good, right? But it wasn't any huge numbers. He only had one game where he hit 100 yards in the first half, and then he exploded down the stretch again. 153 carries and 959 yards in the second half, and that was only in seven games. Because as you remember, he sat out with the hamstring the game against the Saints that they didn't have to win. So my question is, at 843 yards, that's the best first half of a season he's had in terms of numbers, right? He had 300 2 years ago, 581 at the halfway point last year, 843 already. So he's getting the yards. But what's left in the tank is going to be the question. You look at these next three run defenses. It's two teams, right? The Colts, who did about as well as you can do against the Ravens' run offense, they really are good at stuffing the run. So you got two games with them. Yards are going to be tough. Ravens are the same way, although we know what happened in the playoffs last year against the Ravens. He ran wild on them. But there are offensive line concerns. So I look at this and I'm like, wow, this is good, but we've had plenty of talks before about you don't want to get into that 350 carry range. He's on pace for 360 right now, and that's a little bit getting into the danger zone. So I'm very curious, is that second half in him again this year, let alone next year and the year after, which you hope you're in the prime of his career, but you do have to make sure that you are smart with how you use Derrick Henry. So I think the conclusion I draw is, like let's put it this way. Eight games left. If you gave it to him 20 times a game, that's not all that much, right? That's about what you hope for. That would give him 342 carries for the year, which would be 40 more than he ended up with last year. He ended up with 303 last year in the 15 games. So if he played 16, that's 340. We know the line of demarcation is 370, right? The curse of 370. Teron yesterday was talking about Sean Alexander, about Larry Johnson from the Kansas City Chiefs. The list is very, very long. Jamal Anderson. Michael Turner is a great one. Names that you've almost forgotten, right? They had that 1 year where they hit 370, and then the next year there's a big, big fall off. Earl Campbell had a year. Eddie George had a year.
Eddie George was never the same after that big
year. He had 400 carries in the 1 year.
So this is year five for him, correct?
Of course, remember the first year he was backing up DeMarco Murray, so he didn't have a lot of miles.
Really, first 2 years.
Two. So I'd be curious to know, with some of the backs that we're naming, he's 14 carries away from 1,000 in his career. So he'll hit that Thursday night if all goes to plan. He'll have 1,000 career rushes. I'm curious of how long it took some of these backs we're talking about to get to that point. I know that the magic number is 370 in a year, that, you know, you want to be careful of that. But to me, that seems in 5 years because of those first 2 years. And we also have talked about, you know, he didn't really carry the ball a ton at Alabama until his last season there. I mean, he's still, to me, even though there is some of this concern of how much you're using him right now, there's tread on the tire that they should be able to use here for the next couple of seasons. That's why I wasn't all that concerned about the contract.
Right. I think I'm looking at it, at least for now, not as much long-term, but this year. Like, I want to know, is he going to be the same force down the stretch that he has been? Because that's a big part of the equation. If he is, then you feel like this team can go places. We know they proved that they did, that they could do it last year, right? If he's that, he changes the game as much as anybody. But is he going to have that work? Is he going to have that in the tank this year based on the workload that he's already had this year? Remember, they've dialed it back. It was a concerning thing after three or four games. He was on pace for 400 carries, right? And so they have brought that average down to their credit. They have had to say, wait a minute, we have got to give some carries. Yeah, we have got to give some carries to other people.
The guy they drafted wasn't, you know, couldn't stay healthy, and they
100%.
They didn't have any options, and they do now. I mean, with Foreman and McNichols, I mean, they're not.
Yeah, and those guys have done okay. Those guys have done okay, but I think when those guys line up, the defense is going, whew, it's Foreman back there. Now, I'll give them credit. They have not been shy of giving them the ball, and those guys have gotten a decent amount of yards. But I think that's a theme that we should look at as we go forward here. How do they control his workload while still getting the most out of him? And now, of course, you've got a banged-up offensive line. Can they still open up the holes that they've opened up for him? So it's just something to watch for. 182 carries after eight games, that's 31 more than he's ever had in the first half before. So will he have the same push in the second half? Because we know he has been incredible, MVP kind of stuff, the last two second halves under Mike Vrabel.
Well, and I kind of feel like some of the conversations that are having or that are happening behind the scenes now, you know, the coaches have to protect the player from himself sometimes, because Derek is probably going to go, give me the ball.
Of course. That's what you got to fight with all those guys.
But how much of that is, hey, the window is where it is. We're coming off an AFC championship game appearance. Got to get two more wins to achieve our goals. Derek has to be a big part of that. I mean, is he, you know, was that part of the conversation when he signed the contract of, I'm doing this deal because I want to win a Super Bowl here. Let's run me until I can't run anymore. And, I mean, if that's what it is and you get a ring out of it, then I think he'd be happy. I know the fan base would be happy, but, I mean,
dilemma.
Is that the plan?
That's the dilemma, because you're tempted to give him the ball almost every play. You heard Dick Stockton and Greg Jennings going, wow, you know, they haven't really – They've only given it Derrick Henry a few times. It's because there are spots in the game where you're thinking, boy, they need to be feeding him. But then that little alarm goes off in your mind. They've got to make sure they spread it out and don't overdo it. Now, these next couple of games, you're playing the Colts. This division's on the line. You're going to be tempted to give it to them 30 times, right, if you have to. And I think they will. But it's just they have. I think Arthur Smith is conscious of this. I've noticed that in the second quarter of the season. That, okay, let's not overdo it. When we have a chance to dial it back, we got to dial it back and not wear this guy out, because we need him to be himself down the stretch.
Well, I wonder if their hope, too, is they could have a game like the Saints game last year where they have some things either wrapped up or it's a game that it's not going to affect them. Maybe it's week 15 against Detroit and they can, you know, they can shut them down.
Beat the Colts twice, and you can implement that plan.
Sure,
that's. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Look, I don't. It sounds simplistic, but I mean, we talked about it yesterday. I mean, just beat the Colts twice. I mean, this is, you sweep the Colts, you probably just won the division. And it sounds crazy to think that in November, but I think it's pretty fair to say if you beat the Colts twice. I mean, what would your lead be on them then? Three games, right?
Yeah.
They're already that, game up. Oh, by the way, and the Colts have to play the Packers in between. Now, the Titans play the Ravens.
Right.
So,
I mean, really, if you
and
win
the Titans
the next
still
two
have
games.
To play the Packers, too. So there's still a lot of key games left for both teams.
No, it's more important for the tiebreaker situation. It's more important to win the Colts games Not that they're not all important, but if you're going to lose one, lose the Ravens game, even though it's AFC. But you need to win the division games, because if it comes down to a tiebreaker, you'll hold the tiebreaker.
Definitely. The division and then the conference take priority over the games against the NFC, which is why they sat them against the Saints last year. Because they did the math. That was, it turns out, probably one of the smartest things they did.
Yeah,
right? To resist the temptation to put them out there against the Saints.
And it kind of works out in their favor that their last three games, you have two against the NFC in Detroit and Green Bay, and then week 17 at Houston, which I think that game is going to be absolutely meaningless because Houston's going to pack it in at that point, and hopefully the Titans have everything wrapped up. So the schedule, a lot can happen between now and then, but the schedule could be in their favor to be able to try and rest him.
But there's a lot of ifs
there.
You have to be tricky
with the pack it in stuff, because what happens a lot of times
what happened
is
to Baltimore?
Guys are playing for roster spots. Guys are playing for they know their team isn't going anywhere, but they're playing for themselves, and they need to impress. And whether it's to stay there or go somewhere else, they know they'll be on film. And a lot of times that's when you get these big upsets late in the season, because you've got a team that you think is, you know, done, which they are. But they got players on their team that are hungry for something. They're hungry for their next contract. They're hungry for their next job. And they've got everything to play for. Meanwhile, everybody else around them maybe doesn't. And so they are kind of going through the motions. And so, therefore, you have to be careful with that. One thing I was thinking about this morning, with all the talk last night about the Jets, you know, it is interesting. I've rescinded already in 24 hours what I said yesterday, where it just feels like Trevor Lawrence is going to end up in the division of the Titans. He's going to end up in the AFC South. It now feels like the Jets are absolutely tanking. Like they're look, I know the Jets are the Jets.
They did a masterful job of it last night.
Like I said, I know the Jets are the Jets. And you can say, well, yeah, no, it may look like they're doing that, but they're just inept. Okay, fair. Their coach is absolutely dead man walking and should be, and he should never get another head coaching job. He's not a head coach in the league. He just isn't. Adam Gase is not. I think we need to stop fascinating over Adam Gase. There's nothing to be fascinated about other than he's weird, okay? And he's not a very good head coach. And, by the way, he's not some offensive genius that everybody thinks he is. But anyway, it looks like the Jets are on a collision course for Trevor Lawrence. And if they draft him, because they're going to, because he's better than Sam Darnold, and maybe it's not all Sam Darnold's fault, but Trevor Lawrence is better. Willie knows my plan 2 years ago has been foiled. The Titans got too good. I wanted them to be in this position this year to get Trevor Lawrence, but we know that's not happening. But they're going to probably, you know, like with Kyler Murray, right, they're going to clean house, and they're going to be looking for an offensive mind. They're going to look for something, somebody creative, somebody that can do things with Trevor Lawrence. Now, maybe they dip into the college ranks like Arizona did. I don't know. But that seems to be the trend, right? Like the Rams, you get this young guy that's innovative in McVay, and now you've got, you know, Arizona doing what they're doing with Kingsbury. And so here's the question I have for you. If the Titans win the division and they're playing in January, and whether they make a run or not, but they have double-digit wins this season, they win the AFC South, and they're back in the playoffs again, and then whatever happens, fill in the blank. What are the odds in your guys' minds that Arthur Smith is back? And what are the odds that he's the next head coach, fill in the blank, New York Jets or somewhere else? Because there's going to be a lot of teams looking for new head coaches.
Well, it's a great question, and it's really hard to know what the answer is. It's so murky right now, because I think to this point, most potential head coaches have basically said, even if it's a terrible situation, a big rebuilding situation, I'll take it. I'll take my shot. Now, if you watched the game last night at all, one theme, and Steve Levy actually got, you know, he got a nub back from both his analysts by saying, hey, this wouldn't be the worst thing. This is a little conflict for the Jets because they're winning this game, and they may not want to win this game. I think if he had said from the fan standpoint,
you're telling that to two former players.
Right.
They're not gonna...
And they jumped all over him and said, right. There's no such thing. You play to win and all this stuff, which I think if you slice a little thinner, I do think there's some scouts and some people that wouldn't mind having the first pick. But yeah. I get the conversation. And then you go a little further. The Jets have 4 first-round picks over the next 2 drafts. That's as of now. And you never know what else they'll be able to do. So they are in position, if they don't screw it up, to get some good stuff back from the next couple of drafts. And there are a lot of quarterbacks coming out. It's not just Trevor Lawrence. There's some pretty good players that are coming through. So what looks like a terrible situation right now, you got a chance to fix it. But, of course, we know the track record. The Jets is very, very hit or miss, right? They've had a lot more misses than hits over the years, and then Jacksonville is no different. So what do you do when you have the high picks?
I just
took the Browns a long time to get it right, and they still haven't reaped the benefits.
To answer your question, I just went through and looked at, you know, in my mind, the jobs that will be open. We know that at least one in, you know, Houston is open in the AFC South. I would assume Jacksonville – even though Doug Marrone seems to outlast anything.
Yeah, I do think, though, they'll probably – and by the way, wouldn't that be smart on their part, right? You not only do you hire Arthur Smith, you take him away from somebody in your division.
Sure.
Especially if we're talking about somebody who just won the division.
Now,
you take
him,
away their OC.
If it's him, you go after Houston because you already got the quarterback. So you got to rebuild. I mean, there's, you know, Billy O traded away – a lot of big pieces. But
well, it could be Justin Fields going to Jacksonville, you know.
True.
I mean, it may be 1-2. Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, 1-2.
But if you think about it, like going to the NFC West, I don't see any openings there. Everything's going to stay how it is there. The NFC East, you got 3 head coaches that are in their first year with those teams. Now,
yep.
Dallas looks like a dumpster fire right now, but you have the Dak got hurt excuse, even though it didn't look that great before Dak got hurt. I still think no changes there.
Yeah, McCarthy looks like a disaster in Dallas.
It does, but I don't see
change.
I don't see Jerry moving on after a year.
I agree.
NFC South, no. Atlanta is, you know, but Morris could get that job full time, but Atlanta's the only one. Now, that to me could be an interesting fit for Arthur Smith, trying to figure out who the next quarterback is, you know, rebuilding from scratch. So that would be one to watch. The NFC North, Detroit, I think Patricia is dead man walking, or at least he should be. You guys disagreed with me on Zimmer, and I now rescind that. I think that he'll last because they're better than the record shows. So
they're starting to play pretty well. I wonder if
yep.
they could make a run and get into the picture on some level.
Now, the one that, you know, if Matt Nagy completely just blows it, is he in trouble?
He should be. Honestly, I don't think he's another one. He's like Adam Gase.
Great.
I just don't – I think he came in as this offensive, you know, mind and this guy that was going to change. I watched the Bears last 2 weeks. I watched them very closely, and he does things I just shake my head at. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and
you're supposed to be this offensive genius. Yeah, doesn't look that way in Chicago.
And then the Jets will be open. We already mentioned the AFC South. I don't think anything's open in the North, and then the Chargers will probably be open in the West. Now, the Chargers could be a good fit for him because Herbert's there, and you can continue the development there.
I think there's going to be some really attractive jobs for an offensive, for an OC.
And Eric Bieniemy is going to get one of them.
Eric Bieniemy is going to get one, and I feel like Arthur Smith is going to get one. He is. Because here's the deal. It's not just us talking about it here. People nationally are talking about it, right? I mean, his name is out there nationally. And so, you know, I didn't think that was going to happen in Green Bay. I was wrong. I liked him. I just didn't think he was ready. I thought it was too soon. And so far, so good. You know, so far, so good. Looks good. Looks like a really good hire. I don't see any scenario. Not that not that this changes anything, guys. I'm not bringing this up because this changes something. I'm just saying I think that the Titans probably will have to start bracing for the reality that their offensive coordinator is not going to be back, and I hope that Mike Vrabel doesn't decide to do both, be OC, DC, and the head coach.
Yeah, please hire two coordinators. Like, just name.
That's all I'm asking. Just please
name a DC, name an OC. It's
please
not
don't
that
be
hard.
Both coordinators next year if that happens. All right, we'll come back with the legendary voice, Mike Doc Emrick, to start the second hour of the program. But right now, with this weekend's major golf tournament, along with pro and college football, man, there's no shortage of action going on this week and this weekend. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook, wants to put you in the center of it all. To celebrate Sunday's action, DraftKings is going to ensure all new users that you are covered up to $100. That's right, you bet. They cover you risk-free Sunday betting on all Sunday's action. DraftKings will have a special promotion and odds boost every day of this year's tournament in Augusta, Georgia. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the promo code 1025GAME. And when you sign up, ensure your Sunday bets up to $100. That code again, 1025GAME. During sign-up for a limited time, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Risk-free coverage paid out in site credits. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.